It's 2020, listeners, and we're back. New year, same hot fire. Let's get the damn show started.
Listen, when Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike grab mics, it's real sports, real talk, on the field or on the court. If it happened in New York, it's covered like a blanket, dog. Interviews are ill, simply up close and personal. Batter up, Lloyd's batting first, set the tone. Mike's either at the stadium or the garden on the phone. Here we go, Giants and Jets, Yankees and Mets, Knicks and Nets. This is only an intro, the show is next.
A.O.B. It's 2020, and please spark my fresh as we bring you an all-new episode of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Listeners, today is Monday, January 6th, 2020, and this show airs every single Monday from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, TuneIn, Google Play, Pocket Cast. Be sure to hit that subscribe button so you won't miss a damn thing. And if you got any questions just like for me and the Mad Mike to answer, you can always shoot them through email to lloyd@parkmyfresh.com. You can send them directly to the website, or you can hit us up on social media. Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Instagram. Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Twitter. LLOYD, as we hit those up and answer questions and receive questions and all that good stuff. Listeners, happy 2020, and to start the new show off for the new year, we're coming out with a bang as the NFL playoffs kicked off. So we're going to cover all the games and give our picks for the divisional rounds. Also, we're going to talk some New York Knicks basketball as they fired Fizdale. Didn't fire Steve Mills, Scott Perry issue. Problem with the Giants, they fired Pat Shurmur, but they didn't fire David Gettleman, who was a GM. There is something brewing going on that the Knicks and the Giants have in common, and it is not good. We're going to talk Kyrie Irving, who's dealing with a shoulder injury. Just get head on, get it over with, and end your season like they usually do, because you stay hurt, brother. You can't stay on the court. We're going to touch up on that as well. We're going to talk some baseball as Dellin Betances, the one touted, highly favorite player in the Yankees bullpen, has now switched sides, is wearing a different New York cap, and is now playing for the New York Metropolitans. We're going to touch up on that as well. So as always, listeners, let's buckle up, sit back and relax, and start spreading the news. Hey, yo, it's 2020. Let's get it.
How sweet it is. It's Monday. That means the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Show is back. Let's go.
As always, we got to find out where the Mad Mike is and where he's calling from. Yo, Mad Mike, it's 2020, baby.
Yo, Happy New Year. I'm out here on the West Coast following the Knicks as they lose, or as I expect them to lose, four in a row on this West Coast trip.
Yeah, man, 1,000%. We're going to talk about the New York Knicks and, you know, them flying. We talked about the coaching change. We're going to touch up on that. We're going to talk some Kyrie Irving. But let's talk some NFL football, man. Mike, is the NFL playoffs have started, and thus far, all the games have been really good, in my opinion. You know, this is the first time in a long time that I can remember that I enjoy watching every game. The Seattle-Philadelphia game was kind of mad, and I don't know if that was because Carson Wentz got hurt, you know, or what it was, but that was just kind of the weakest game of all the games that I've saw. But let's start off with the Buffalo Bills playing against the Houston Texans, Matt Mike. And that was the first game that was played over the weekend with the Houston Texans winning in overtime, all right? And Buffalo, there were so many missed opportunities that I felt that cost Buffalo the game. Between the penalties and the turnovers, you know, that missed sack at the end, you know, there's just so many plays at the end you could pinpoint to. It could have gone differently for the Bills in so many ways. You know, but that's the way this league works at times, listeners. Okay, that's the way it works. When it came down to it, they didn't make enough plays, in my opinion, to have the start that they had, to go up 16 to zip and not be able to finish it off. It's truly gut-wrenching for everybody, in my opinion, and that organization and the Buffalo Bills fans out there. And if you had to point to the momentum shift, in my opinion, I think the obvious play had to be the J.J. Watt sack in the third quarter on 3rd and 8 for a loss of 8 yards that ended a potential opportunity to score a touchdown. That, to me, was a momentum shift in the game. And it looked like Buffalo was in scoring position again, but the Texans took that away, and the Bills kicked the field goal on that drive, but the Texans went straight down the field and scored their first touchdown of the game on the next drive. And on top of that, listeners, they get the two-point conversion too, all right? And I know from being, you know, from that stadium, the crowd got back into it. The momentum completely shifted at that point. The Bills fumbled on their next possession. The Texans came back and took the lead with a touchdown and another successful two-point conversion. You know, in an extremely gutsy effort by the Bills, they came back and they tied it and sent it into overtime, but just couldn't finish the job. Could that be because they had a young quarterback? You know, listen, you got to give credit where credit is due, listeners. Buffalo had a really good season this year. Really good. I thought at some point that they would turn all the cheek and go in the opposite direction during the regular season, but they had a really good season, and they have a really bright future ahead of them, man. Mike, what were your thoughts on that game?
I thought during that game, I thought two things. When Buffalo was really putting it on the Texans defensively, I was just like, I can't believe Bill O'Brien still has a job. How many more times are we going to see the Houston Texans lay an egg in the first round of a playoff or their first game of the playoffs? We're going to see this offensive genius constantly get outcoached by the other defense. Because let's take into account, here's another head coach, because we think that these offensive geniuses, these head coaches got to come in and call the offense. And how many more times do we got to see it blow up in these coaches' faces in the playoffs? And then all of a sudden, not only do their offense wake up, but the Buffalo Bills offense and their overrated quarterback, too, just go into a shell. And you can tell me whatever you want. Their quarterback was 24 for 46 with a 53% completion percentage. He took some really bad sacks. He took the J.J. Watt sack, which knocked him out of field goal range. In the fourth quarter, he took another sack for 19-yard. I want to tell you that they ended up being 4th and 29.
Yeah, that's when they were field goal range, that sack I think you're talking about.
Correct, yeah. And we're talking about a game that went to overtime. That sack alone, you know, everyone wants to praise his ability to scramble and the 92 yards rushing. But at some point, you need your quarterback to be a quarterback. And part of being a quarterback is being able to sense the rush, being able to get away from get out of the pocket and throw the ball away. And because he buys into the mobility part of it, he really doesn't have a sense in the pocket. And we can say whatever we want. You know, the kid had a 16.8% QBR. So we can talk about a lot of things. I saw a quarterback who's been overmatched. If you look at his final month of the season, he was one of the 5 worst quarterbacks in football over the last month of the season. That's there for the stats people. If you want to say I'm hating, it's there. And that's what I saw. I saw an overmatched coach get bailed out by the MJ of quarterbacks and Deshaun Watson. And I saw an overrated quarterback who's been bailed out by his defense all year. He couldn't be bailed out by the defense in that fourth quarter. That's exactly
right.
What
and
I saw.
Again, the defense played a great game like they've really been doing all season. They completely shut the Texans out in the first half and held the talented receiver in DeAndre Hopkins to 0 catches in the first 2 quarters. And they just went. The Texans went to halftime, listeners, with just 81 total yards. And in the second half, obviously, you know, they ran out of gas. If you got to keep on being on the field over and over and over again, it's bound enough you're going to crack. And it was just a remarkable job done all year by the Buffalo Bills defense. Remarkable.
Yeah. But you and then I mentioned Bill O'Brien. If you want to talk about Bill O'Brien, let's talk about deciding to go for it on 4th and 1 to ice the game instead of kicking the field goal. If he would have kicked the field goal, it would have forced Buffalo to have to score a touchdown instead of...
I didn't understand that. That's great. Thank you for bringing that up, because it slipped my mind, man, Mike. I was wondering what the hell he was doing when he went for it.
He was afraid that his kicker could miss a kick. And when you coach scared, you coach to lose. He didn't want to give the opportunity for them to get the ball back somewhere around the 40-yard line, 45-yard line on the Houston side, where all they had to go was 25, yards or so to get their own game time field goal. And I thought in doing so, he showed his team a little bit about who he is as a coach. He's a coward. He could preach to you all the confidence in the world. He believes in you. He had an opportunity right there to show his kicker he believes in him, and he didn't. And I'm over here telling you, we acknowledge that Josh Allen had one of the worst fourth quarters that we've seen in a playoff game. It's out there statistically. You saw, like I said, I read you the numbers. The kid was making 54%. He had under 60 whatever QBR. And you're afraid to you can't be afraid at that point. Put the ball in his hands and say, hey, you need to score a touchdown to beat me. Can you do it? And he dropped the ball.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And let's see, hopefully he can get better. We'll see what happens. You know, he has a lot of talent. A lot of talent. A lot of talent. We'll see what happens.
I don't think he's going to have a long career. I think you'll see kind of the Cam Newton, because that's who he is. He's Cam Newton. He's the white Cam Newton.
Yeah, his style of play is definitely, it catches up. It'll catch up with him at some point.
I 100% believe that. And all the people that were like, well, Cam never worked on his mechanics. Why? Because they relied on his legs. They always said, hey, well, we can't get with his arm, we can get with his legs.
Not for nothing. And where's RG3 at right now, listeners?
No, you're right. But I guess the difference is Cam had a body that could take the pounding. But you can only take the pounding for so long. Right. At 30 years old now, Cam is breaking down.
Right.
So
Cam is one of your bigger quarterbacks. Josh Allen, he doesn't have the build as Cam Newton, and neither did RG3.
Yeah, but I think Allen is a little bit bigger than
No, he's bigger, but you're still getting hit by these linebackers and these defensive linemen? Yeah. He's not built to take those kind of hits.
Yeah.
He's not built to take those kind of hits. But let's move on to the New England Patriots and the Tennessee Titans. And the New England Patriots found themselves playing on Wild Card Weekend, listeners, for the first time in a decade. After falling to the Dolphins in a stunning loss in Week 17. They welcome an old friend, Mike Vrabel, who played for the Patriots, and Bill Belichick. All right, and they shocked the world by upsetting defending Super Bowl champions 20-13. And with that, the future of both Tom Brady and offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels is in question. Because Josh McDaniels is on his way, possibly, to a head coaching job. All right, he has an interview with the New York Giants. All right, both clubs were able to put up points on their offensive drives of that night. But it was the Titans who reached the end zone first. Both defenses appeared to clamp down in the first half. And every time I say New England is not a good team, they somehow always manage to end up in a Super Bowl. So I didn't want to say that this time, although I didn't think their team, was better than the Super Bowl team or the team before that or the year before that or whatever the case may be. And at some point, I thought Tom Brady was going to turn into Tom Brady and mount the comeback. But you know what, though? Listeners, I will say that he didn't have anybody to throw the damn ball to. Edelman is Edelman. He's not that kind of receiver. And I know they got Sanu from Atlanta, but he's not that kind of receiver neither. He's not that kind of receiver neither. They need a big dog on that team. In the end, it was a great game. It was a back-and-forth game that turned into a back-alley brawl, in my opinion, and went down to the wire. Went down to the wire. And the simple answer here, man, Mike, is why the Titans won, in my opinion, is grit and determination. The Patriots owned the time of possession, total yardage, third down conversion, and several other key categories in that game. If not the entirety of it. But, you know, they simply could not pull away from the scrappy Titans. And New England had no answer whatsoever for running back Derrick Henry. The league leader in rushing racked up a monstrous 182 yards rushing and 204 total yards from scrimmage to go along with rushing touchdown in a game where points were at a premium. They were at a premium, and Henry owned the Patriots. Owned them. And you want to know why I feel the Patriots lost this game? The defense did a number on quarterback Ryan Tannehill all night long, in my opinion. They held him to only 72 yards passing and one passing touchdown through four quarters. They also grabbed a key interception early in the fourth quarter with the Titans up 14-13. And the Patriots just couldn't capitalize, though. And after being forced to punt on a subsequent drive and also failing to come up with a key forced fumble against Tannehill in the first half that also could have swung the momentum in their favor, those failures, listeners, added to the dominance of Henry and a late game pick that was thrown by Tom Brady to end the Patriots season. Is Tom Brady going to retire? I don't think he is. Are we not looking at do I see some decline in his play? Yes, but could that be because of the weapons that he has surrounding him? I don't think Tom Brady wants to go out like this. We'll see. I'm expecting him to come back next year. Mad Mike, what's your thoughts on Brady and this game?
First off, I'll start by saying Josh McDaniel won't be the coach of the New York Giants because word is he wants total control. I can see him going to Cleveland. They fired their coach and their GM. I can see him getting total control. Young quarterback in Baker Mayfield still has weapons in Landry, Chubb, Odell, etc. That's that. Now, as far as the game goes, I give Mike Vrabel all the respect in the world because once upon a time, Rex Ryan said, "We don't fear Ryan Tannehill. We know that he's, he basically came out and said, just because they tell you he's a franchise quarterback doesn't mean we believe he's a franchise quarterback when he was a coach of the Jets defense. And Ryan Tannehill was putrid against the Patriots. He was putrid in his career against the Jets. And Mike Vrabel realized that and said, I'm going to just feed my monster all day. I'm not going to let my quarterback. When was the last time we seen somebody win a game where they only had 15 passes and less than 100 yards? Tim Tebow against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Outside of that, we've never seen that before. So credit to Mike Vrabel. Like you said, I just don't think the Patriots have enough weapons at receiver. But shame on them for not changing their style because they do have a lot of weapons at running back. Say whatever you want, but James White has been really good for them. They have Sony Michel, who's been good for them. Rex Burkhead, can run it. They should have utilized the running backs a lot more yesterday, especially in the game where or Saturday night, I believe they played. Especially in a game that was one score, 1 point the whole way through. They could have ran the ball more. But I don't know. You gotta ask yourself two questions. If you're a Patriots fan and if you want to be, if you're just an unbiased NFL follower, two things would be, one, what's the dynamic between Kraft, Belichick, and Brady now, where Jimmy Garoppolo leading the number one ranked San Francisco 49ers on a potential title run now, while Brady looks like he's pretty much done? And two, you got to wonder why they gave up that second round pick for Mohamed Sanu when there was clearly other receivers available.
You're right. Absolutely right. And you are right. Running back, they should have utilized their backs a lot more than what they did. And boy, do they miss Rob Gronkowski. Can I say that much? You know, there was reports that he might have came out of retirement. They should have did everything in their power to get him to come out of retirement. But if you ain't get him to come out of retirement this past season, I don't know if he's going to come out next season. That might be it.
Yeah. No, I don't think. I think the this is not Gronkowski's not hurting for money, and he's not hurting for a second career. You know, when you look at a guy like Jason Witten tried his hand at ESPN Monday Night Football. He probably left the game earlier than he anticipated. Took his chance. He bombed out as a commentator, as an analyst, whatever you want to call it, and went back to football. Rob Gronkowski is not struggling for anything at all.
Fair point. Fair point. But you know what? I am so happy New England lost, and I'm not going to rub it into any Patriots fans because I want to. Is every time the Patriots win, the Patriots fans, and I know if they're going to rub it in my face. I'm not going to do it. But I do think that the dynasty that is the New England Patriots,
that's over.
It's over. Because it's all over. The other teams in the AFC are getting better. And they're going to continue to get better. The Baltimore Ravens, the Houston Texans, the Kansas City Chiefs, the Buffalo Bills. There's a lot of teams that's going to be better. Going to be better. So now let's move on to the next game that was played yesterday, Mad Mike. And let's start off with the Minnesota Vikings against New Orleans Saints. Another good game. And there were two things all week for the Minnesota Vikings leading into their 26-20 wild card victory over the Saints. All right? The majority of the team believed, and one of the things all week long, and as obnoxious as it may be to hear about the haters and the doubters surrounding the group who won this game, a lot of people felt, okay, that the quarterback couldn't get the job done. Couldn't get it done. And I'm not saying he played a hell of a game, but I will say that Kirk Cousins made some great passes during that game. To Adam, one of them was to Adam Thielen towards the end of the game. What a throw. What a throw. And for most of the week, Minnesota was more than a touchdown underdog. Nobody expected Minnesota to beat New Orleans. I didn't even expect Minnesota to beat New Orleans. But I didn't think it. Dalvin Cook returned from his three-week layoff. He rushed for 94 yards on 28 carries. And the engine at Minnesota's offense on Sunday, you know, he was a draft prospect who had a handful of legal issues and enough red flags to make every team pass on him in the 2017 draft. And after months of brushing off questions about whether this team can win big games with this quarterback, I guess for one Sunday, they was happy to address that notion. All right? Listen. Great game. Great game. Drew Brees looked mortal in that game. They put a lot of pressure on Drew Brees. A lot of pressure. Kudos to that front line of the Minnesota Vikings. They put a lot of pressure on him.
Yeah, I thought, one, I'm not going to blow this out of proportion because Minnesota, if they're going to go to Super Bowl, they got to do it. If they're going to win a title, it's going to be a road game. Every game's got to be a road win, right? So we're talking about a team that just won their first road, had their first road victory of the season against a team with a winning record. We're talking about a team, actually, it's a team that it's the first road victory against a team with a winning record in 2 years with Kirk Cousins. I don't think you can escape those. I mean, when you see the video of him, you like that. You like that after the game. To me, that's a guy that still hasn't learned. That's a guy who still hasn't humbled himself. Maybe he don't do it in front of cameras, but he still hasn't humbled himself, and he's still the same average guy. I personally think that this game changed in the second quarter with the Saints up 10-3 or 10-6. For some reason, Sean Payton has this, you know, he's just constantly trying to catch teams off guard. He's always doing things off cuff. And, you know, for such a great coach to make such a big blunder, instead of waiting for the 2-minute warning, he tries to go deep on third down ahead of the 2-minute warning. He gets picked off. Breeze gets picked off. They return it. Now Minnesota gets the opportunity to run a play ahead of the 2-minute warning. They still have their timeouts, and they end up scoring a touchdown on that final, you know, was inside the 2 minutes, and they go up 13-10 at halftime. You know, Will Lutz misses the kick, but I mean, I'm not going to fault the kicker missing the 50 yarder in a rush situation. But, you know, I think Sean Payton had a bad day. I thought Drew Brees, like you said, was bothered. We keep calling all these people great quarterbacks, and we keep seeing that when the line play around them is slipping, how bad these guys really are. I hope everyone's paying attention to that in this offseason. Either build your offensive line or build your defensive line. That's how you win championships, not, you know, the quarterback's only as good as the offensive line. I do want to mention that Stephon Diggs had a meltdown. That's something to watch. He only had 2 catches for 19 yards. So while we are all adoring the Vikings for their victory, it's clear that their wide receiver still feels a certain way about his quarterback.
Boy, and how immature was that? Like, at the bottom line, it shouldn't matter how many damn catches you have. All that should matter is that you got more points on the scoreboard than the other team.
You know what? I thought that at first, but I don't necessarily blame him, because you're talking about your number one receiver and you're using him as a decoy, or
But would that necessarily be the quarterback, or would that be the coaching staff?
Well, I don't know. The fact that he was upset tells me that it could have been either one. He was upset. He's either upset with his quarterback, or he's upset with his offensive coordinator. But you know, he had to be restrained. So it's clear to me that he wasn't on board with whatever the game plan was.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Listen, who does Minnesota has who this coming week? Do they have
San Francisco? San Francisco? No.
They got Green Bay.
They got Green Bay, and I want to tell you, because they were the 5 seed, right? And Seattle was the 6 seed.
Yeah.
So Seattle's going to
San Fran.
Wow, San Fran. So we got divisional matchups next week, I believe.
Yeah, we do. I mean, real quick before we give, you know, our, you know, predictions on who's going to win, you know.
We got Vikings Niners. We got Vikings Niners, and okay, we got Packers Seahawks, which is great.
All right. So before we go into that, let's just talk about the Philly Seattle game.
Before you go on, I do want to mention one thing, you got to feel bad for the Saints, and I hate to say this because obviously they went out and played the game and they lost, but, you know, last week in that San Francisco-Seattle game, the referees didn't call pass interference. They didn't go back and review it. It was clear pass interference at the goal line for Seattle. Seattle ends up losing the game instead of getting the ball inside the one. And if they win that game, the Saints get the bye week. So I know that they didn't get screwed in game to, you know, yesterday, but they did get screwed over by the refs yet again. They should have had home field advantage. They should have had a bye week. They shouldn't even have been on the field yesterday, and now their season's over. And NFL refereeing is still at the heart of the problem.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the offseason, and they need to do something, because this might have been the worst year of ref officiating that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Since I've been able to follow the sport of football.
And I bring that up to say this, because we're about to talk about the Philly game. How do you not flag Jadeveon Clowney for a late hit to the head of Carson Wentz and knocked him out of the game?
Yeah.
And basically gave Seattle a victory?
You're right. There was a couple of blown calls in these playoff games as well. There was another play in that game where Malcolm Jenkins jumped off sides and they didn't call it. A blatant offsides call, they didn't call it. But speaking of that game, Mad Mike, and this was the least, you know, this is the most lackluster of all the games, in my opinion. Why in the hell did Philly not get to kick a field goal when they went down the field towards the end of the game in the fourth quarter? Why didn't they take the points? They went for it, didn't make it, ended up driving the ball down again and had to go for it again. Like, why don't you take the points when you could take the points with that much time left on the clock?
I normally agree with you, and normally I say take the points because you have no idea what's going to happen later on in the game. But at that point, I think the thought process is we're down by eight, so we need to, if we're going to kick the field goal here, we obviously still need a touchdown, or we need, you know, two more scoring drives after this one. And I guess with a backup quarterback, they didn't believe that they had three scoring drives in them in that fourth quarter. So I understood it, but I do agree with you, especially in the playoffs. You never know what's going to happen. Just take the points. I just think at that point they're looking at it like, if I take the points, if I get back down here and I don't score a touchdown, I'm still going to need a touchdown. If I don't score a touchdown, then I need a field goal, and I got to get the ball back and do it again. And, you know, if Carson – I guess what I'm saying is, if Carson Wentz was not out, I think that they would have taken the points and believed that Carson could drive them down again. I don't think that they had that faith in Josh McCown, and I don't fault them. I mean, he is a backup quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, man. But, you know, I guess I was – with all that being said, and I respect that and agree with you, I still would have took the points. I just feel in certain situations you can't leave points on the board. Because if they get those 3 points, man, Mike, and they drove back down the field and they was even closer to scoring a touchdown a second time than they were the first time. You score a touchdown, you win the game. The reason why I said I would have took the points is because at that particular point in time, Philly's defense was stopping Seattle's offense.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the reason I would have taken the points was simple. If I need a touchdown anyway, I'll take the points there, and then I'll take my chance with just scoring a touchdown and kicking the extra point. Opposed to, if by going for it there, you were saying, I'm going for it for the touchdown. Even if I score it now, I need to go for the 2-point conversion. So, yeah, I'm with you. I probably would have just taken the points, but I'm not going to kill him for it. I know why he didn't do it.
Yeah. All right. Well, now let's move on to our predictions for the division championship, starting with the AFC. All right. So we got, who is Kansas City playing? Kansas City is playing who?
Kansas City got the Texans, and the Titans got the Ravens. I'm going chalk. I'm being honest with you. I'm going chalk across the board, 1-2 in both conferences.
Yeah, I definitely can't see. I mean, it'd be a monumental upset if the Texans beat Kansas City. I just can't see that happening. So I got Kansas City beating the Texans, and I think Tennessee can go into Baltimore and upset the Ravens, but I can't see that happening either. If I had to pick an upset, it would be that. In the AFC, I would pick Tennessee to beat Baltimore, but I'm with you. I have, you know, Baltimore winning, and I have Kansas City winning, and I have a matchup in the championship game, in the AFC championship game, the Baltimore Ravens against the Kansas City Chiefs to see who goes to the Super Bowl to represent the AFC.
Yeah, and you know what? Vegas agrees with you, because Vegas has the Ravens as a 10-point favorite, and they have the Chiefs as an 8.5-point favorite. So basically, they have a 10-point and a 9-point favorite. These games should be blowouts. They have both are 2-score games, which you don't see often in the playoffs.
Right. Okay, now let's move on to the NFC. And like Mad Mike was saying, we have the San Francisco 49ers matched up against who?
The Vikings.
The Vikings, and then we have the Green Bay Packers matched up against the Seattle Seahawks. Okay? Now, I'm going to go upset on this, man, Mike, and I think Seattle is going to beat Green Bay.
Honestly, I think they have no shot. With the way that the Green Bay Packers defensive line is playing right now, I don't think Seattle has no shot. Zero.
I'm gonna give them a shot at this. That's my upset. I'm gonna go on a branch on a weak branch with this, listeners, and I'm gonna pick Seattle over Green Bay, and then I got San Fran beating Minnesota. Just from what I've seen from Minnesota's secondary, I don't know if they're going to be able to deal with those receivers in San Fran, man.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Deebo Samuel looked good. He found his
Dominic Rhodes is having such a tough season, man.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I think Emmanuel Sanders is going to end up beating. I mean, Trey Waynes and Xavier Rhodes both have had really bad seasons, and Rhodes actually caught a stinger in yesterday's game. So we got to see how he comes out of that in practice this week. Yeah, I mean, Dalvin Cook. We could say, you know, he's the heartbeat of that team. When he goes, they go offensively. But let's be honest, that San Fran front seven is might be the best in the game right now. And they're healthy. I just think that they're going to get after the quarterback to the point where you're not going to see enough downfield. There's going to be no downfield threat from Minnesota with the way that they rush the passer. I think San Fran got it.
All right, so there you have it, listeners. In the AFC, me and Mad Mike agree. We got the Chiefs going up against the Baltimore Ravens. In the NFC, I'm going out on a limb, and I'm saying Seattle's going to beat Green Bay. So I have Seattle versus San Fran, and Mad Mike has Seattle versus Green Bay. So with that being said, we're going to cover this more in next week's show, but we have so much more to talk about. We're going to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back from the break, we're going to talk some New York Knicks basketball. We're going to talk some Brooklyn Nets basketball. We're going to talk some New York Yankees baseball and whatever else we can think of. So we'll be right back with more of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Welcome back to the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. The first half of the show, listeners, we covered the NFL playoffs, which has been an exciting way to kick off the playoff season this year. All right, now with the second half of the show, kind of, you know, I know we wanted to talk a little bit about basketball and a bit of baseball, Matt Mike, but let's stay on football for a little bit longer. And let's talk about the New York Giants, all right? Let's talk about the New York Giants, who did the right thing in firing Pat Shurmur, but did the wrong thing in keeping Dave Gettleman. And we talk about this cancer that evolves in the New York Knicks organization and now the New York Giants organization. And Dave Gettleman is that cancer with the Giants, and Steve Mills is that cancer with the Knicks. They should have fired Gettleman this year, along with Shurmur and along with Betcher. And because they didn't fire Gettleman, listeners, I 1,000% believe that he's going to make the wrong coaching decision for this team going into next season. If you ask me who I would like to see coach the Giants next season, I would like to see Mike McCarthy coach the Giants next season. I don't think he is. I have a feeling he might end up in Dallas. That's where I think he's going to end up. I just have a feeling, listeners. I have a feeling, Mad Mike, that the Giants have a hard-on for Josh McDaniels. Mind you, Josh McDaniels, who once was a head coach in the NFL. How did he fare? He got fired. Got fired. And I say this all the time. Good offensive coordinators don't make good head coaches. And good head coaches don't make good coordinators.
Leaders, can you lead? And that's all that matters.
And here's the thing. The reason why I say Mike McCarthy, Matt Mike, is he has proven success as an NFL head coach.
I think the issue with Mike McCarthy, and it's we can say whatever we want. At the end of the day, nobody hired him last year. And we'll see what happens this year. But Just the stories that leaked out, you know that it was Aaron Rodgers who, by the end of their time together, thought he was a dinosaur, didn't like him, didn't like the offense anymore. And I mean, you can easily say, you know, as successful as Aaron Rodgers been, he didn't like the offense. But you heard the rumors of McCarthy sending in plays and Rodgers going getting to the line and changing the plays because he didn't like them. You got to answer for all those things as a coach. But you know, I what I'll tell you about that that is simply, like you said, good offensive coordinators, good defensive coordinators don't necessarily make good head coaches. You got to be a leader. Adam Gase, people say he's an offensive genius. Adam Gase struggles with leadership. Adam Gase struggles with cultivating relationships. He was quoted as saying, I don't care about, you know, or whatever, don't care about the Jets fan because I'm rich as hell. You know, that's just an idiot. And the Giants got it wrong with Pat Shurmur. Personally, I think they still have it wrong with Dave Gettleman. And consider this for one second. Before Dave Gettleman got fired from Carolina, he was picking, the Carolina Panthers had the seventh pick in the draft that year, and they took Christian McCaffrey. You figure this. He ends up taking Barkley. Then number six, Daniel Jones. This year, the Giants are picking fourth, and the Carolina Panthers are picking seventh again. So think about this. The two teams that he has overseen over the last three drafts going into this year are both picking top 10 this year. Top seven, rather. So you look over the history of general managers. When was the last time somebody picked four straight years in the top 10 and was considered a good GM?
Not only that, man, Mike, let's bring out the fact that he went to the media again. Now he's like, oh, you know what? I want to admit I made a mistake. I thought I could do both. I thought I could rebuild and win games, and I dropped the ball with that. You did. That's not the only thing you dropped the damn ball with. Just him making that statement just really made me irate. Because again, here he is talking to the media and giving us hot caca. He's giving us hot caca. Giants fans, he is giving us hot caca.
Yeah, it didn't make any sense. I mean,
none. Just like it didn't make no sense when he said, why would we sign Odell Beckham Jr. to trade him in and trade him a week later or days later?
Yeah, but the thing, here's why I say this. You got to think about this, right? You don't trade Odell Beckham Jr. if you plan to go to Daniel Jones in week three. Odell Beckham Jr., his beef is with Eli Manning. You trade Odell Beckham Jr. because you're committed to Eli Manning. If you're not committed to Eli Manning, Odell Beckham Jr. should still be on his roster. Should he not?
I agree. And just think the way Daniel Jones throws the ball. Okay, with him having Odell Beckham Jr. and Odell Beckham Jr. having Daniel Jones along with Saquon Barkley and, you know, then with Darius Slayton emerging as a decent second option, you're now looking at wideouts with Odell Beckham Jr. and Darius Slayton, and then that slides Shepard into the slot. Just think about that. And I also want to throw this out before we move on to Kyrie Irving, all right? At the end of the day, when it comes to Odell Beckham Jr., Odell Beckham Jr. needs the New York Giants, and the New York Giants needed Odell Beckham Jr. And now that Odell Beckham Jr. is not in New York, I think he realizes what New York has done for him as a player. And vice versa. He can say what he wants to about his situation in Cleveland, but from reports, players are coming out saying that he wants out of there. Now, you can't seem like a sour apple, right? You can't. It's a bad thing going on. You know, there was reports Antonio Brown was working out with the New Orleans Saints. When you continuously go to organizations and have organizations release you, you'll find yourself out of the NFL real quick. Real quick. So how would it look on Odell Beckham Jr., listeners, if he goes to another organization and wants out of there within a year? Organizations are going to start being very wary of him, and they're not going to want to deal with it.
Well, I'll give you an example, right? If you consider, let's say Odell Beckham went to play for New England. Let's say New England goes and trades for him, right? New England plays the style of offense that he doesn't want to play. So that's the thing about Odell. Odell, he wants to win. First of all, he wants to win. But he wants to win his way. He wants to play in an offense that's successful, but his way of being successful. He doesn't. The way Julian Edelman plays receiver, And the way Odell Beckham play receiver are two different things. Odell Beckham wants to play getting downfield. Odell Beckham wants to play over the top of the defense. He doesn't want to play in the middle of the field. He doesn't want to play, you know, three-step drop, quick hits, because he doesn't want to take that pounding on his body. So that's where you have to figure the game out for him. You have to find a trade partner that not only plays his style, but that's committed to giving him the ball. And there's just too many mouths to feed in Cleveland for him. So, yeah, I agree with you. Not only that, but you're irrelevant in Cleveland. Now, outside of LeBron James, who's mattered and came out of Cleveland?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Too many superstars. But, you know, I mean, look, whoever the Giants sign, they need to find a coach who's going to agree with the roster building plan.
We know it's going to be Matt Rhule.
You know, they need to agree with the roster building plan. They got to patch up that offensive line. Offensive tackle was the biggest problem area for the Giants. They need to patch up that offensive line. They need to replace Alec Ogletree. They need to land an elite edge rusher. And they need to plug holes in that secondary. That's a lot. They also need to make a decision on Evan Ingram. I mean, he's a promising tight end, but this dude can't stay healthy for the life of him. Can't stay healthy.
Listen, they got a lot of holes.
They do.
They got a lot to do. Everyone says they got a lot of money. They do. But you got to think about something. Do they need a receiver, a top-flight receiver? Probably. If you're not using a draft pick on them, let's say Amari Stoudemire, Amari Cooper hits the open market, right? You're talking about having to outbid a lot of teams. You're talking about having to outbid the Jets. The Jets have $80 million themselves and a big-time need there, too. So let's say Amari goes for $20 million. Boom. We already know that elite pass rusher costs $16 million a year, $17 million, maybe more now, with Khalil Mack and these guys getting $20 million. So you're looking at $20 million there, right? So now the Giants have $100 million. They get their elite pass rusher and they get their elite wide receiver. Now that's already $40 million off the books. You still didn't find your middle linebacker. You still didn't fortify your secondary. You still didn't figure, you got to figure out your tackle position, right? Because we know Nate Solder's not really a left tackle. And if you move him to right tackle, I mean, who in this league is paying $15 million for a right tackle and $15 million for a left tackle? You never heard of it. The Giants might be the first team ever to be doing it. So, and on top of that, we're all asking the same question. Is Dave Gettleman the right man to make these choices? By the way, if you trade it, and you heard him admit it, if you trade that third rounder and you re-sign Leonard Williams, one, you're going to be paying Leonard Williams $16 million a year to stay. Two, that pick next year upgrades to a fourth. So obviously we know that you're not going to let him walk for nothing after giving a third rounder. So take that $40 million for your pass rusher and your wide receiver. And at that $60 million, all of a sudden, I'm telling you, yo, you spent $55 million on three players.
Yeah. Oh, man. Boy. It's painful to hear all that. It's just painful.
So?
Well, let's move on to something that's just as more painful. It's talking about the New York Giants, and that's Kyrie Irving. All right? And there's a shoulder injury threatens to spoil his debut season. Not to my surprise, and I'm sure not to Matt Mike's surprise, as he called this out before Kyrie Irving even signed with the Brooklyn Nets. All right? Kyrie Irving is said Saturday surgery, it's not off the table, and that he's hoping to avoid it. And he spoke with reporters for the first time since initially injuring his right shoulder in mid-November. He was diagnosed with a shoulder impingement, all right? Got a cortisone shot in December and attempted to postpone or eliminate the need for surgery. And he was quoted as saying he's in a better place now, whatever the hell that means. And him and the medical staff, the Nets medical staff I'm speaking of, will reevaluate him in a month or two whether arthroscopic surgery will be needed. Now, here's the thing, listeners. Just get the damn surgery done. Why are you trying to make it seem like you're trying to do what's best for the team? Just continue to do what you've always been doing and do what's best for Kyrie Irving. This team is not playing bad basketball in his absence.
Well, I'll say this, though. team only has two wins since December 1st against teams with a winning record.
Yeah, but you know what, though, Matt Wright? We said that with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant going on, that wasn't going to win at Brooklyn Nets a championship. That those two guys alone wasn't good enough to get them a championship. And we both agreed that they had a better nucleus when they had D'Angelo Russell there. And they blew that up. When they didn't really need to, they had something good. So you blow that up to bring in the two guys that you brought in, one who you already knew was going to be out for the season, and another one who's been injured every single season the last couple of years.
Well, though, you know, those signings to me always kind of, I know everybody wants to say age was much different, but to me, they weren't the Knicks. You know what I mean? Like, the Knicks needed that. The Nets, to me, didn't necessarily need that. I always said I thought the Nets can go keep D'Angelo Russell, sign Tobias Harris, and get another piece, Al Horford. Would the Nets today be better? Or even Kemba Walker. You know what I mean? You see what Boston is without Kyrie. I don't think you can ignore that. Boston wanted to keep Kyrie, maybe probably because of the embarrassment of losing him after the trade. But you add Kemba Walker in, the ultimate teammate, the ultimate competitor, and look at what happened to Boston. You take Kyrie, who's now, I'm not going to say he's a malcontent, because he's not a malcontent. He's a sensitive guy who has media issues, who, you know, he really is a prickly dude. Like, you don't take it. You know, he just appears to be unapproachable when it comes to media. And you take Kevin Durant off of this, and Kyrie, who's already injury prone. It always screamed to me, you know, that this wasn't going to work. I never bought into the championship talk, and we don't know how Kyrie's going to be. I mean, we don't know what the hell's wrong with his shoulder. But I'll tell you one thing: you need your shoulders to shoot a ball. So I don't see why he's playing around with it. All the cortisone shot is going to do is get the pain out of there. It's not going to erase the opportunity for more structural damage. You're only going to make things worse playing with it that way. I don't understand why he doesn't want to get the surgery. It doesn't make any sense to me outside of the fact that, one, it's embarrassing. Two, it just feeds more into the fact that, how old is he, 28, 29 years old? 27, yes. Something like that.
Yeah, he's in the upper 20s, probably closer to the 30 range than not. So
you're talking about a guy who lost his entire first year in Boston to injury, and now you're going to lose your entire first year in Brooklyn to injury. So, I mean, what's the outlook there? It's that's why what he's trying to save face on that front.
Amazing. And every time I see this dude sit on the bench, I think of you, Matt Mike. Because you called it. Not that I didn't know he was an injury-prone player, but you called it.
Yeah, he's not. And I'm being a hypocrite because obviously that's who we wanted. Actually, we wanted Kawhi and KD, but
right. We didn't say we wanted. We knew that in order to get KD, we may have to get Kyrie. And we was like, okay, we'll take that. But we both just said Correct. We both said we would rather have Kemba Walker and Kawhi Leonard.
But yeah, he's definitely not.
Well, at least I said. At least you said it. I may have said Kyrie, but I know you threw out Kemba Walker's name quite a bit.
Well, I knew Kemba wasn't an option because of his age. But anyway, I just knew that, you know, especially, like I said, I think everything changed once KD blew out his Achilles. Because you don't want, you know, Kyrie can't lead a team, especially a young team. If the Knicks are building a young team, I didn't want him anywhere near him after what I saw him do in Boston. And not only that, but at least we know Brad Stevens' way is you know, tried and true. Like, we've seen it work. So when Kyrie gets in there and tells you that you know, Brad Stevens has a leg to stand on when he's coaching any superstar. I didn't, David Fizdale, what has he got? Outside of the fact that LeBron James thinks he's a good coach and Greg Popovich or Steve Kerr or Eric Spoelstra. I mean, give me a break. What is David Fizdale going to go into a conversation with his superstars and say, hey, I'm the guy that Marc Gasol got tired of?
You're right.
So,
and speaking of Fizdale, you know, let's talk about his replacement, Mike Millen. I got to give kudos in one sense, and in another sense, I'm real uneasy about this situation. The Knicks are playing better basketball under Mike Miller. And that's a bad thing for the New York Knicks, listeners. And you want to know why that's a bad thing? Because if the Knicks play better basketball, not necessarily win games, but if they play better basketball, I have a feeling that that's going to be good enough for the Knicks to retain him as their head coach and as their head coach moving forward. When he is not the answer. He's not the answer. Me and Mad Mike, we always talk constantly throughout the week about sports. And Mad Mike said to me, you know, we was talking about, you know, Mike Miller. And, you know, I was saying, wow, Mike Miller's, you know, he's actually, you know, got this team playing better. And Mad Mike was like, wait a minute, Lloyd, pump your brakes. They're getting destroyed by teams, by the better teams in the league. And they're still losing to teams that they should beat. Or that are beatable, I should say. So they're 6-4 under Mike Miller. They might be 500 under him right now. Because they lost to Phoenix, and then they lost to the Clippers. So I think right now they're 500. But right now, 500 is looking better for Scott Perry, Steve Mills, David Blatt, Allen Houston, than 0-12 or 1-11.
They're 6-8.
They're 6-8?
They're 6-8 against since Mike Miller took over. And from what I can see, not one win against a team with a winning record now that Brooklyn is under 500. And just to give you, this is why I was telling you, I don't see anything that's changed, is because to me, they've lost these last two games by a combined against the Suns and the Clippers by a combined 11 points. They missed 24 total free throws in these last two games. So is this a team to you that seems like they're getting better? They gave up 76 points in the first half against the Clippers without Kawhi. I mean, come on, dude. This team ain't getting better. What they're doing is they're playing harder and they're beating up on the team. So again, with David Fizdale in tow, they lost to everybody. With Mike Miller, at least they're beating and playing tough against the really bad teams. You know what I mean? So from that standpoint, things seem better, but they're still not sharing the ball. The assists are still down. The other day I heard them saying, well, Mitchell Robinson's been playing a lot better under him. Which can be a testament to the defense, right? The defense on the perimeters has improved, so he has to help. He's not helping out as much. Therefore, by having to only defend his own man, he's cut down on his fouls. And me and you have spoke about that on the show often. Is he a foul-prone player, or is he always put in bad positions because he's playing help defense constantly? We know when big men have to play help defense against driving point guards and dish-offs, they're probably going to draw the foul. I don't know, man. I don't see it. But you're right. The more they win, the more argument there is to keep Mills, Perry, and him along. But at the same time, it's not all roses. He's made the decision that he's going to play Kevin Knox less. He's going to continue to play Kevin Knox less, which tells me that it wasn't Fizdale. It's the front office.
And that's another thing I wanted to do. It's great that you brought that up. And I'm sorry to cut you off, Matt Mike, but you have Reggie Bullock is back. And now they started playing what's the other dude's name? The other shooting guard, Wayne Ellington. So with both of those dudes playing, Damian Dotson is not seeing the court no more. Kevin Knox is not seeing the court no more. Alonzo Trier is not seeing the court no more. They ain't got no choice but to play R.J. Barrett because he's a first-round pick.
Frank actually had his minutes cut until this past week.
Like Frank Ntilikina because Elfrid Dennis Payton Smith. Is playing. Dennis Smith Jr. is on the bench.
Dennis Smith has actually asked for, you know, behind the scenes asked for a trade and had to, once that information leaked out, publicly denied it, but we know that he's the one that we know his team leaked that info. Why? Because we know that it's in Perry and Mills' worst interests for Dennis Smith not to work out. Why? Because he was the crown jewel. Remember something, trading KP for Dennis Smith Jr. last year, it wasn't only about getting rid of KP. Remember how they kept telling you that they didn't want Frank, or Mills would have never drafted Frank. He wanted Dennis Smith Jr. Well, obviously, he went out and got Dennis Smith Jr., and Frank looks like the better player now. So now that trade looks even worse. So,
yeah, and I also want to give a props to a player that I've been dogging, all right? I got to give a little bit of credit to Julius Randle, Mad Mike, as he's playing. Listen, not that I never doubted his ability as a basketball player. I just thought, I said he was playing out of control, and he was. And you agree with me. He is playing much better basketball at this particular point in time. Much better. Much better basketball. And an interesting stat that I want to throw out there, he's averaging more points, more rebounds, and more assists than Kristaps Porzingis is at this very moment. Now, I'm not saying that to say that the Knicks, you know, they shouldn't have kept Kristaps Porzingis even though he didn't want to be here. I'm just pointing out the fact that Julius Randle is playing much better basketball at this particular point in time. Much under control. He's playing his game. He's playing amongst his strengths and not trying to play with his weaknesses. And maybe that's because they don't have him holding a ball or bringing a ball up anymore. Who knows? For whatever reason. But he is playing better basketball. And I just wanted to point that out and give him his props because I have been very critical of him this year. Very critical of him this year. Playing much better basketball. So I want to give him his props, Mad Mike.
Yeah, you know, I was always on board. I always said that my signings would have been him and D'Angelo. I think that they asked too much of him. I've said it on the show before, Lloyd. I just think that what makes him special is kind of what made Antoine Walker special, the ability to kind of be a point forward, but. You saw with Antoine Walker too. When you made him the point forward, when you're like, all right, grab the rebound and we're gonna outlet to Julius and he's gonna set us up, that now all of a sudden his special traits become average. Because now you have to measure that trait against your normal point guard, right? So now when he's doing that, it's like, what the hell are we doing? This guy's not a point guard. He doesn't have the speed to break down a defense. He's not doing any of that. And the Knicks for some reason don't pay attention to those things. What made him special was the fact that in spurts, he can do that. You know what I mean? He has the ability to do it. So when you ask him to do it within the offense, it's like the triangle, right? Everyone plays a role in the triangle, which makes the triangle so damn deadly. It's just outdated. But I don't know. I see them giving him less of that role now, and I think it's allowing him to flourish and for his skill set to actually show more.
And we both agree, if the Knicks have somehow managed to get a superstar on their team, he'll be a good Robin.
I think that's all this team is missing. Not for nothing, but how about calling the Lakers and saying, hey, you know, Kyle Kuzma's on the outs with LeBron James and the Lakers are starting to now listen. How about Marcus Morris for Kyle Kuzma?
Yeah, listen, at this point... that's not a bad idea. Whatever.
And also, by the way, because we're on it, and it's a player that me and you were both like, what the hell are we doing not taking this guy? Especially if we were going to stink last year to begin with, we could have gave him a redshirt year to get healthy. Michael Porter Jr. looks like the best player to come out of that draft last year, don't he?
Yeah, yeah. Which is a player that I believe in our mock drafts we both wanted the Knicks to take.
I'm just throwing it out there. You know, he's healthy. He's finally getting playing time with Denver. And he looks amazing. And Kevin Knox can't even get on the court with this bad roster.
But you know what, Mad Mike? Here's my scary thought process on that. If Kevin Knox is not on the court, would they have done the same thing to Michael Porter Jr. if he was on the Knicks? I just have no faith in this.
No, because I'll be honest with you. We said it before. I think I said it when he got drafted. Kevin Knox is the complete opposite of Frank Ntilikina, where Frank's offense was so bad. When you drafted him, you knew it was going to take you years to develop that part of his game before you saw benefit, reap the rewards of it. Kevin Knox's defense and his motor were so bad in college, it was going to take you years to develop that part of his game. And you can't draft developmental players back-to-back years when you don't have a proven track record of developing players. I think Michael Porter Jr., outside of the back injury, was a complete player. There was no development. I think he was fine-tuning. I think they dropped the ball.
Well, I agree with you. They dropped the ball on so much, man, and when they do, it's not damn surprising to me. But before we go on to your rant, your first rant of the 2020 new year, let's talk a little bit New York Yankees before we close the show out. And Dellin Betances signed with the New York Mets. And, I just want to get your thoughts on that and see if you spoke to our good friend Joe Rivera, sports columnist from the Sporting News, to see what his thoughts are on that. The Yankees got to make a move, man. They need another starter. We was happy when they got Gerrit Cole, but now the Yankees are standing pat. Just standing pat.
And all right, we're gonna answer your question, and we're gonna do a Mad Mike rant at the same exact time. One, yes, I did speak to Joe Rivera, and I don't think he was happy that they let Dellin Betances go, specifically because it seems like it was just about money. But the Mets front-loaded this deal. They gave a huge signing bonus. And when it's all said and done, he could make as much as $11 million. And I thought it was risky. I thought it was really risky on them. But this is a trade, not that, this was a signing for the Mets that screamed that they wanted to, they're going to try to trade him. He's got a low base. They kept it low specifically for that reason of trading. But my problem here, and excuse my answer and rant, and the same thing, but I told you this was going to happen. They insult our intelligence every chance they get. You're not a better team if you have to lose the best setup man in baseball, your shortstop, and your left fielder for the sake of signing your ace. You didn't get better. And the fact of the matter is you didn't spend money. What you did is you lost everybody in order to sign this guy. That's like me saying, it's like me going and telling you, Lord, I'm going to get us an ace, and we're going to be so much better. But now I got to move. In order to get that ace, I have to move my second baseman to short, and I need to move what appears to be my first baseman to second base. I don't even know what I'm doing at third base yet because I still have Miguel Andujar on the roster. And I don't even know what Luke Voit is. And I don't know if because Luke Voit's just seemed last year to be just as injury prone as Greg Bird. So what the hell do I have on my infield? But I got an ace. So Yankee fans, you're idiots because we're going to win a world championship because we signed Gerrit Cole. But I lost all these other pieces. But don't look at that because I signed Gerrit Cole. Stupid.
There you have it, listeners. He answered the question and the rant. And one zip. So with that being said, listeners, we want to thank you for sticking with us. Welcome to the 2020 New Year, listeners. We have so much more to talk about. We want to continue to get better as a show. And we want to thank you, as always, for sticking with us and supporting us. So with that being said, listeners, please have a safe and blessed week, as me and Mad Mike always wish you to have. And me and Mad Mike will see you in 7 days. So, hey, yo, happy 2020, brother. Let's get up out of here.
It's a brand new year, 2020, and it's the same old Knicks. One more loss added into the L column. Couple wins, though. I mean, they're playing a little bit better. R.J. Barrett's hitting some free throws. hopefully there's some momentum that they can build on going into the All-Star break. Take a break and see what we can do in the second half of the season. Hopefully make this place a little attractive, bring some free agents in. You know, the same old, same old. But one thing that's not the same old, because we keep getting better, is this show, Lloyd A. Thompson, the Mad Mike Sports Show, drops every single Monday. If you're on Twitter, Instagram, you can follow at Lloyd A. Thompson. The show's available on all podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And tell a friend, anybody that's into sports, we have a phenomenal show. It's only getting better as time goes on, so make sure they subscribe as well. Once again, brand new episodes every single Monday, part of myfresh.com. Hit LloydAThompson.com as well. Drop some questions to be answered on a future episode of the show. And we'll catch y'all in 7 days. Once again, Happy New Year. Catch y'all in a minute. Peace.